Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
New activation and upfront payment for 3-month plan required. Taxes and fees extra. Additional restrictions apply. See mintmobile.com for full terms.
On Valentine's Day 2004, one of Italy's greatest cyclists was found dead in mysterious circumstances.
There's growing mystery about the death of one of the country's sporting heroes, Marco Pantani.
In November 2021, new evidence had come to light, alleging that the Italian mafia were involved in Marco Pantani's death.
The mafia goes where money is.
It's a very dark story, the Pantani story.
Sport's strangest crimes. Marco Pantani, Death of a Pirate.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Chris Berrow, and in the early hours of Sunday the 25th of June, this is our main story. The Russian government says the leader of the Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, will move to Belarus, and charges against him and his fighters will be dropped hours after their rebellion ended. Wagner troops halted their advance on Moscow after the Belarusian leader, Alexander Lukashenko, held talks with Mr. Prigozhin. He acknowledged the about turn.
We were just 200 kilometers away from Moscow. During that time, we did not spill a single drop of blood of our fighters. We're turning our columns back and leaving in the opposite direction, to the field camps, according to the plan.
In other news, the UN has condemned deadly attacks on civilians fleeing the Sudanese city of El Geneina, reportedly carried out by an Arab militia. It was an extraordinary Saturday in Russia. At one stage, the Wagner mercenary group, led by Yevgeny Prigozhin, vowed to go in convoys to the centre of Moscow and seek out the heads of the Russian defence and military. Red Square was sealed off and machine gun posts were reportedly set up in the southwest of the Russian capital. In his morning television address to the Russian people, President Putin acknowledged that Russia was in the midst of an armed mutiny. He described the move by Yevgeny Prigozhin as a knife in the back. This crisis was triggered earlier by the Wagner group's rebellion in the southern city of Rostov-on-Don. That's the command centre for the Russian army since its invasion of Ukraine. There, the Wagner mercenaries have been fighting alongside Russian troops. Later on Saturday, a major development emerged. Yevgeny Prigozhin said his convoys that were heading towards Moscow would turn around and return to their bases to avoid bloodshed on both sides. He had put a message on the Telegram social media channel, and it's voiced by a translator.
They wanted to disband the Wagner. On June 23rd, we went out on a justice march. Within a day, we were just 200 kilometers away from Moscow. During that time, we did not spill a single drop of blood of our fighters. Now the moment has come when the blood can be spilled. Therefore, understanding all the responsibility for the fact that Russian blood will be spilled on one of the sides, we're turning our columns back and leaving in the opposite direction, to the field camps, according to the plan.
Shortly before that statement was issued, the president of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, said he'd negotiated a deal with Yevgeny Prigozhin, in which the mercenary leader had agreed to stop further movements of Wagner fighters in Russia and de-escalate. The apparent deal comes after the authorities in Moscow imposed anti-terrorism rules in anticipation of Wagner forces arriving in the capital. Matthew Amroliwala spoke to the BBC's Eastern European correspondent Sarah Rainsford, who spent many years in Russia. So what are her thoughts on what happened there on Saturday?
Extraordinary. I'm not entirely sure that I've yet absorbed exactly what's happened, but certainly the pace of events was unprecedented. The very fact that this was happening itself was unprecedented. And then at the last minute to have Wagner forces supposedly 200 kilometres or so outside of Moscow, and for Alexander Lukashenko to step in and apparently save the day, is yet another weird twist in a very, very strange 24 hours or so in Russian affairs. I mean, and that is saying something. You know, it's been pretty weird there for a long time. But from all of this, of course, Vladimir Putin is damaged. This was a man who was very close to him, and for many, many, many years doing his dirty work in various aspects and spheres of life, from Syria to meddling in elections to all sorts of other activity, and most recently, of course, fighting with his forces in Ukraine, this creature of the Kremlin had turned against its master, essentially. And so I think that's why this was so dramatic. This wasn't just anybody. This was a man who Vladimir Putin had trusted, who had, it seems, turned around and stabbed him in the back, as Vladimir Putin himself had said. And so the spectre was raised of something very dangerous and very disturbing happening in Russia, the fact of blood being shed, which apparently appears to have been averted. So it is difficult to absorb exactly what might have happened and what hasn't happened, but certainly a very, very extraordinary day.
Given the language, though, from Vladimir Putin, treason, betrayal, I mean, how do they even go about trying to piece that back together? Because that Wagner group has been so critical on the battlefield, hasn't it?
Yes, and I think Yevgeny Prigozhin crossed a massive line. I can't see how there can be a way back for him after Vladimir Putin has openly accused him of betrayal. How could he possibly then pardon him? Maybe even if he said, you know, he'd gone slightly mad on the battlefield, for example. I just can't see that kind of backtracking. We haven't seen the details of the deal that has supposedly been agreed. All we know is that there were some kind of security guarantees, according to President Lukashenko of Belarus, those guarantees for Wagner fighters. What I would say is that, you know, this at its very root appears to have been about Yevgeny Prigozhin's role, his status and his survival with the Wagner group that he established, because the Russian establishment was trying to absorb the mercenary group into the military, and Wagner and Prigozhin had been resisting that. So, you know, the enmity, the hostility, the terrible relationship with the defense ministry goes back many, many years. And we've seen it over recent months spill out in dangerous rhetoric. Now we've seen that dispute play out in an extremely dangerous way for Vladimir Putin himself. So the real danger to Mr. Putin, to Russia as a whole, has been averted. But still, the big question remains of what exactly now happens to Yevgeny Prigozhin. How can his threat, if you like, be removed, even with this deal supposedly on the table, even with his forces turning around and leaving the Moscow region?
And I suppose the next few days will be absolutely critical as well, with so many of these unanswered questions. Are we going to see, for example, changes at the top of the Russian military, the defense ministry, the head of the army? That's what Prigozhin has been calling for. He's also called for the tactics to be much hardened in terms of what we've seen so far. We wait to see if any of that feeds into how this gets resolved.
Yeah, and those are huge questions again. I mean, I find it hard to think that as a result of this blackmail, essentially, Vladimir Putin would sack his defense minister. I think that would make him look weak in a way that he would not want to happen. I know that's certainly what Yevgeny Prigozhin has been calling for all along, and also for the head of Valery Gerasimov, the chief of staff. To give in, if you like, to those demands would be pretty much a difficult climb down, I think, for Vladimir Putin, given that he came out and made a national address where he talked about treason. Vladimir Putin likes trust. He likes loyalty. He hates being betrayed. The phrase stab in the back is an extremely serious one for him to use. So I find it hard to think that anything that Prigozhin was demanding would be given to him.
Sarah Rainsford. The retreat by the Wagner Group and its leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has led to speculation about negotiations behind the scenes. I asked the BBC security correspondent Frank Gardner what scenarios could have led to this about-turn by the Wagner convoys that had been destined for Moscow.
I think the phone call that the Belarusian leader, Lukashenko, made with Prigozhin, with the agreement with President Putin, must have presented him with an offer that he couldn't refuse. I am speculating, but I think given his situation, it must have been something along the lines of, look, you're on your own here. No one's come out to support you. You know, okay, you're 200 kilometres from Moscow, well done, but you're not going to get in. There's going to be a lot of blood spilled, and that's Russian blood, and you're Russian. You're a patriot. So you might as well give up. It hasn't worked. Just, you know, cut your losses. Save the lives of, you know, if you care about your troops as you say you do, then spare their lives. And meanwhile, no, you're not going to get prosecuted. You can have a nice, comfortable retirement in Belarus.
Is there any chance that this won't play out as it seems to be about to play out? He won't end up going to Belarus? Or is it pretty much a done deal now that this has been publicly announced?
I think anything could happen. This whole thing is so incredibly murky and mysterious. I mean, so much happened in 24 hours. There is there's quite a growing conspiracy theory on social media that this is all some kind of put-up job, some sort of ruse. I mean, people say, well, hang on, how were they able to walk into Rostov on Don, the headquarters of Southern Military Command, without a shot being fired? I think the answer there is because the Kremlin didn't expect to get attacked by its own people in the rear like this. I just don't think they saw this coming. And if it was some kind of a put-up job, it's not a very clever one because it's not a good look for Russia. These are very bad optics for President Putin. He appears weak and out of control. He promised this whole special military operation a year ago plus to make Russia more secure. It's made it quite the opposite.
Frank Gardner. Well, in his emergency address on national television, President Putin had said that the Wagner Group's actions amounted to treason. Its leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, rejected that, saying his fighters were patriots and insisting Russia could not carry on in corruption and deceit. As we already heard, the Wagner mercenaries had taken control of the southern city of Rostov-on-Don, the command centre for the Russian army, since its invasion of Ukraine. Our Russia editor, Steve Rosenberg, reports.
In the Russian city of Rostov, this was no ordinary Saturday. People woke to the sight of tanks on the streets, armoured personnel carriers, armed fighters. In this city of a million people, the mercenary group Wagner was in control. Closely linked to the state, this private army had fought for Russia in Ukraine. But this looked like mutiny.
We are in the
Wagner's leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, had gone rogue. His feud with Russia's military leadership over how the war in Ukraine is being fought had boiled over. At a military HQ in Rostov, he told Russian generals, "We've come for the defense minister and the chief of the general staff. If we don't get them, we'll blockade the city and head to Moscow." Back in Moscow, President Putin's reaction, that's treachery.
Our actions to defend the fatherland from this threat will be harsh. Everyone who consciously chose the path of treason and planned the armed uprising has embraced blackmail and terrorist methods. They will be inevitably punished before the law and our people.
All day, there have been reports of convoys of Wagner fighters and hardware heading north towards Moscow. Attempts were made to slow them down with trenches and barricades on the main highway. But in the Russian capital, what do Muscovites make of the drama? Some people I spoke to hadn't noticed it at all. Others seem confused. Before, they told us Wagner was good. Svetlana tells me they gave them medals. They were positive heroes. Now suddenly they're villains? That's hard for me to get used to.
Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. And there was a flurry of phone calls between world leaders as the armed mutiny gathered pace. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan appealed for common sense and phoned Vladimir Putin to offer his help in finding a peaceful solution. President Biden called the leaders of Germany, France and Britain to discuss the latest events. The White House said they all affirmed their unwavering support for Ukraine. Latvia and Estonia, both NATO members, tightened security on their borders with Russia. Well, tensions have been building between Yevgeny Prigozhin and Russia's military leadership since February, when he accused senior Kremlin figures of depriving his mercenaries fighting in Ukraine of ammunition. Our security correspondent Gordon Carrera has been examining Mr. Prigozhin's rise from hot dog vendor to head of one of the world's most infamous military outfits.
Yevgeny Prigozhin was jailed for robbery in his home city of St. Petersburg in 1981. After leaving prison, he began selling hot dogs before moving on to expensive restaurants. He caught the attention of Russia's leader and in time became known as Putin's chef. He catered for visiting world leaders, but in recent years he's branched out, running military and semi-covert operations around the world on behalf of the Kremlin. That led to the FBI placing him on their most wanted list, accusing him of interfering with America's 2016 election. But he became best known as head of Wagner, a sometimes brutal private mercenary group working to the Kremlin's agenda across the Middle East and Africa. Last year, he began recruiting prisoners to fight in Ukraine. But bloody battles like the one in Bakhmut led to growing tension with the military leadership. In May, Yevgeny Prigozhin angrily accused the defence minister Sergei Shoigu and the military chief Valery Gerasimov of using his men as cannon fodder and denying them vital supplies.
У нас нехватка боеприпасов 70%. Шойгу, Герасимов, где боеприпасы?
In recent weeks, he'd been growing even more outspoken, increasingly seeming to challenge not just the military, but also Vladimir Putin, the man who previously had protected him, bringing what had been a simmering crisis to the boil.
Gordon Carrera. Events in Russia were being closely monitored throughout Saturday in the Ukrainian capital Kyiv. As President Putin acknowledged initially that Russia was in the midst of an armed mutiny, his Ukrainian counterpart Volodymyr Zelensky said that Russia's weakness was obvious and that everyone who chose the path of evil destroyed himself. After the turnaround was announced by the Wagner Group, Mr. Zelensky, in his nightly address, accused President Putin of running scared.
The man from the Kremlin is obviously very afraid and probably hiding somewhere, not showing himself. I am sure that he is no longer in Moscow. He knows what he is afraid of because he himself created this threat. And to you, people of Russia, the longer your troops stay on Ukrainian land, the more devastation they will bring to Russia. The longer this person is in the Kremlin, the more disaster there will be.
Our correspondent Andrew Harding spent Saturday assessing the mood of Ukrainian fighters on the front line in the Donbass as the developments across the border in Russia continue to change rapidly.
Ukrainian army medics rushed to treat another shrapnel casualty near the front lines outside Bakhmut. Russia may be in disarray right now, but the fighting here is as ferocious as ever. During a brief lull, the head doctor here, call sign Yoda, sounds unimpressed by news of a mutiny in Russia. Most of us don't really believe it, he says. Or maybe it's a performance, something to try to distract us. What matters is that we fight on. But later, one of his team grins and says, if there is a revolution in Russia, I'm getting drunk.
They're just heading off now to the front line to pick up some more wounded. The fighting seems to be getting much more intense around Bakhmut, and the word from the Ukrainians is that they are advancing now steadily, meter by meter.
A divided, demoralized Russian military certainly offers opportunities for Ukraine's forces, and the timing could hardly be better for them as they prepare to commit far more troops to their counter-offensive. But success is not guaranteed, and there are fears here that an unstable Russia could pose new threats to Ukraine, perhaps even some form of nuclear sabotage. And yet, for now, Ukrainians are gripped by events unfolding in their giant neighbour and hoping an unpredictable situation may yet indicate a useful turning point in this war.
Andrew Harding. So what effect will these developments in Russia have on the war in Ukraine? General Douglas Lute is a former US permanent representative to NATO. He talked to Helena Humphrey.
I think Prigozhin and the Wagner Group will be cut down to size. I don't buy this recent explanation that Lukashenko and Belarus mediated some sort of deal that will defuse the situation and everything will be okay tomorrow. I think in the coming days, you're going to see a harsh form of Putin justice brought to Prigozhin and his and the leadership of the Wagner Group. This will not be forgiven and forgotten.
But isn't the question also, General, as to whether Putin can really carry on without the aid of Wagner forces?
Well, it's true that the Wagner forces in Ukraine were among the most active, and while suffering very heavy attrition themselves, among the most successful in the last 6 months or so. So even removing them from the front lines in Ukraine presents the Ukrainian counteroffensive an opportunity. I don't accept, however, that this force can one day be in Rostov-on-Don, welcomed by the Russian people, even portion of it headed to Moscow on the M4 highway, and then tomorrow simply return without incident to the front lines in Ukraine. There's more of this story that will play out in the coming hours and days, and we'll be watching it closely.
General Douglas Lute. And still to come,
Police and safety investigators could be seen boarding the ship shortly after it docked. Also arriving was a vessel towing four white ballast buoyancy tanks that were used to launch the doomed submersible.
The ship currently docked in Canada was used to launch the mini-sub that was destroyed during a dive to the Titanic wreck, killing all five people on board. Now to other news. The UN has denounced the killing of civilians fleeing the city of El Geneina in the west of Sudan. The UN Human Rights Office has blamed Arab militias and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces for the ethnically targeted attacks. The RSF have been fighting the Sudanese army for 10 weeks, prompting 2.5 million people to flee their homes. Our Africa regional editor Will Ross reports.
The UN Human Rights Office says people fleeing war in the Sudanese region of Darfur have given horrifying accounts of executions carried out by Arab militia backed by the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. The UN quotes witnesses who had managed to get out of El Geneina and cross into neighbouring Chad. Many of them saw non-Arab people forced to lie on the ground before being shot at close range. They spoke of dead bodies scattered on the roads towards the border. The killings in Darfur are a continuation of the conflict that began in 2003. Once again, there's growing evidence of ethnic cleansing in Sudan.
Will Ross. Now, as we record this podcast, vote counting is underway in Sierra Leone, where 12 candidates are challenging the incumbent president Julius Maada Bio, who's seeking a second term. His main rival is Samura Kamara, who narrowly lost a runoff vote against Mr. Bio in 2018. Mr. Kamara has complained of vote rigging and says people were prevented from casting their ballots in two districts. The run-up to the election was extremely tense, with supporters of both sides accused of carrying out violent attacks. Investigators in Canada have boarded the ship that was used to launch the submersible destroyed during a dive to the Titanic wreck. All five people aboard were killed. The ship, the Polar Prince, returns to Newfoundland, from where Nomia Iqbal sent this report.
Police and safety investigators could be seen boarding the ship shortly after it docked. Also arriving was a vessel towing four white ballast buoyancy tanks that were used to launch the doomed submersible. They were later taken away for inspection. Officials from Canada's Transportation Safety Board have been sent to St. John's to gather information, conduct interviews and assess what they described as the occurrence. The US Coast Guard is also involved.
Nomia Iqbal in Newfoundland. Now, the Brazilian football star Neymar has been fined for a second time because of irregularities in the construction of a lake in the grounds of his beach villa near Rio de Janeiro. Local media say he could be ordered to pay up to $1 million in penalties for environmental damage. More details from Leonardo Rocha.
The authorities in the city of Mangaratiba, a popular beach destination south of Rio de Janeiro, had cordoned off the area, saying the work breached environmental protection rules. They said no planning permission had been given. Officials said builders had diverted a local river inside the protected rainforest area to feed the artificial lake. Neymar's father tried to stop the inspection and only allowed the officials onto the property after they threatened to arrest him. On Friday, Neymar posted pictures online of himself in the lake.
Leonardo Rocha. And now we return to our top story, the extraordinary day in Russia. The Wagner leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, had said his convoys that were heading towards Moscow would turn around and return to their bases to avoid bloodshed on both sides. The announcement follows day-long negotiations conducted by the Belarusian leader, Alexander Lukashenko, with President Putin's agreement. Mr. Putin had earlier acknowledged that Russia was in the midst of an armed mutiny. So what does it all really mean for Russia and its people? Yalda Hakim spoke to our Russia editor Steve Rosenberg and asked him for his thoughts and observations on the developments throughout Saturday, especially in Moscow.
Remember, this is a city which has seen many dramatic events before. One man said to me, look, we survived 1991, the collapse of the Soviet Union, dramatic events there. There were tanks on the streets of Moscow then. We survived 1993, he told me. Again, very dramatic events. Remember the tanks that were firing at the Russian White House. And he said, we'll survive whatever comes today. It is a watershed moment. It is a very dangerous moment for Vladimir Putin. I mean, this is a man who's been in power so long, right? 23 years. And when you've been in power that long, you kind of think that you're invincible and you can survive anything. One of the problems he has is, I keep thinking back 16 months to when President Putin announced the start of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, what he calls the special military operation. One of the justifications that he gave back then for doing this was to make Russians safer, to boost national security for Russia. look at what has happened since then. Drone attacks over the Kremlin, drone attacks in other parts of the country, intensive shelling of Russian regions bordering Ukraine, saboteur groups coming across from Ukraine into Russia, and now an armed rebellion, armed mercenaries making their way to Moscow, demanding the removal of the defense minister, which Vladimir Putin appointed. Has it made Russians' lives safer? We don't see greater security, we see greater insecurity over the last few months. And that is a problem, I think, for the Kremlin.
You gave us a sense of the resilience of Moscovites and the Russian people, saying, look, we've survived other things like this, you know, and we'll survive whatever comes now. But are they having a moment of reflection and pause and thinking, well, how did we get here?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, public opinion is something which can change quite slowly. It'll be very interesting to gauge any change in public opinion over the next few days or weeks. So far, I haven't detected that, right? And even when I was in Belgorod region a few months ago, which was being shelled and people's lives were less secure, people were not joining the dots and blaming the invasion of Ukraine for their growing insecurity. One woman I was speaking to on the street today, she said, hang on a second, 1 minute the authorities are telling us that Wagner are great guys, they're heroes, they're very positive, they've been given medals for fighting in the special military operation, and the next we're being told that they're villains. It's very difficult, she said, for us to process this change. The narrative has changed. It's turned around 180 degrees. Some people here are finding that quite surprising.
Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. And that's all from us for now. There will be a new edition of the Global News podcast later on. If you'd like to comment on the podcast or some of the topics we're covering, please do send us an email. Our address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Chris Hansen. The producer was Liam McSheffrey. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Chris Barrow, and until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Hello, Nairobi.
Hello.
I said, hello, Nairobi.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Namulanta Kombo, and my BBC World Service podcast, Dear Daughter, is on the road. Here in my hometown of Nairobi in Kenya. It's the podcast where we share letters and stories and words of wisdom for daughters everywhere. And this is the second of two Dear Daughter live shows, the relationship special. So, you know what to do. Wherever you find your BBC podcast, search for Let's Do It Everyone. Search for 1, 2, 3.
Dear Daughter!
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince.
Welcome to the 27th season of The Infinite Monkey Cage.
And we are dealing with some very, very explosive things, such as
bees.
We're going to explain how bees explode, why wasps don't explode, how delicious wasp honey is, before we then climb into a supervolcano, metaphorically.
And then we're going to discover how you might feed yourself inside the supervolcano by eating fungi.
Or ultra-processed food. We're also going to look at ancient DNA and
sharks.
Listen to The Infinite Monkey Cage wherever you get your podcasts.